on social media at that time really wasn't talked about. And I really started to have to become my own private detective and figure out what was going on and bringing this information, doing this research, because I was tired of going to the doctors and I was tired of feeling unwell.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. I've brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted.
Thank you for joining us here on the Autoimmune Hour with Sharon Saylor. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio. Now, we don't want you to worry about taking too many notes, so you can join the Autoimmune Hour's Courage Club, and we'll send you the transcripts and show notes from every episode. Sign up now at understandingautoimmune.com. Now, back to your host, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome, everyone, to the Autoimmune Show. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And as always, it's my honor and pleasure to be with you here on another episode. It's always so exciting, the amazing people I meet along this healing journey from autoimmune. And tonight, I've just got a wonderful chai tea here I'm curled up with. It's got coconut milk in it tonight. It's, you know, usually I make homemade almond milk. Didn't have time, so I put some great coconut milk in there. What are you curled up with tonight? I hope it's something good. And I've got a great guest that actually I met on Facebook. I know. Isn't that interesting? I meet people in the most amazing ways. And when I saw her page and her bio, I was like, oh my gosh, I've got to have her on. We haven't talked about this subject at all. And so let me introduce Crystal Kent. She is a person that she says she's suffering with fibromyalgia. She is an Army veteran and fibromyalgia advocate and patient leader. She has 20 plus years of social service professional experience and advocacy work focusing on educating the fibromyalgia community on their illness and how best to advocate for their own healthcare needs and apply for things like medical disability and entitlements. She's also a veteran, and she serves on the WIGO Health Patient Leader Advisory Board and is a board of trustees for the Fibromyalgia Care Society of America. I'm going to bounce back to this, that she's a veteran, because she's also the co-founder of the Veteran Voices for Fibromyalgia and her own personal work on the founder of the Fibromyalgia Pain Chronicles. So welcome to the show, Crystal. So great to have you here.
Thank you. I'm actually very honored and humbled to be here, and I appreciate you making me sound so great. I'm actually just a normal person who's navigating illness and doing advocacy work, and I just feel like, hey, I'm like everybody else. I put my pants on one leg at a time, so I really appreciate your intro of me. I'm like, woo, that's I sound awesome.
Well, you are.
I'm not so awesome.
You are awesome, Crystal. We had a chat over Facebook and had a great time, and I was so impressed, because what I find is what I call thrivers, and mm-hmm. those are the people who are like, yeah, it's not so great over there, but I'm going to see what I can make blossom in this garden, even though this isn't probably my favorite garden right now. I'm going to make something grow. And you have just done amazing work in self-advocacy and patient leadership, which I think is sorely missing. But I want to circle back about, tell me a little bit about your fibromyalgia journey. And what is fibromyalgia? I mean, you and I have talked about it, but maybe someone in the audience isn't aware of what it is.
Okay, so fibromyalgia, the interesting thing about it is it's actually been documented in medical literature dating back to 1592. But there's just this constant difference of opinion amongst people that are suffering with fibromyalgia and the medical community and science community about what exactly is it. And they don't know. But as of October 1st, 2015, it was reclassified as a central nervous system disorder. They do not know if it's autoimmune that is affecting the CNS system or if it's a central nervous system degenerative disease. But what they do know is that the effects of having this illness, it is invisible. So there's a lot of misunderstanding and misconceptions by people who do not have fibro, because you can't always see the symptoms. But what they do know the classified symptoms of fibro are is you have chronic widespread pain all throughout the body. But one of the categorized ways that they determine if your pain is fibromyalgia is if you're having it in all four quadrants of your body. You have it on both sides, upper, both sides, lower. You don't necessarily have to have that pain simultaneously at the same time, but I have, which isn't fun. But you've had it in those areas consistently. The medical community defines it as 3 months. In some other countries, they'll define it as 6 months long of having this pain for it to be considered chronic pain of fibromyalgia. Then you have other symptoms that are with the illness, such as you get brain fog, which you can become disoriented, some cognitive issues, forgetting words, kind of stumbling over speech, replacing words, and I'm infamous for saying things backwards, which is kind of funny, and I can laugh it off. You do have some like general like flu-like malaise, which is, you know, you feel like you have the flu almost every day. It just kind of varies in severity. Chronic fatigue is a huge one. And the two symptoms that the fibromyalgia community complains about the most is the chronic fatigue and the chronic pain. So we do have the chronic fatigue, plus we get insomnia, or what I like to call painsomnia. A lot of times the pain keeps us up or wakes us up. And so it's hard to get a full night's sleep. And then a lot of misunderstanding about these two symptoms of fibromyalgia is you do, and I call it situational symptoms, which is my classification, but they are symptoms of fibromyalgia, is depression and anxiety. And the reason why I call them situational is if we did not have this chronic illness, we would not be contending with depression and anxiety. And a lot of times we run into medical personnel or people think that the depression anxiety causes fibromyalgia, and mental health does not cause fibromyalgia, but it is a subsequent symptom. And it's common with any chronic illness, whether visible or invisible, really any life-changing illness, you are going to experience those feelings of depression and anxiety, especially, you know, grieving the, you know, life that you had that you can't do. So yeah, those are the classic symptoms of fibromyalgia. You know, a lot of people develop secondary medical conditions as a result, because fibromyalgia does interfere with all of your internal bodily systems. So like an example is the hypothalamus. Fibromyalgia interferes with that. So a lot of people can have like excessive sweating or night sweats, or we run hot or cold, because that our hypothalamus also regulates our internal bodily temperature. And there's been times I've had my temperature taken at the doctor and I'm like well below normal. So, and that, you know, and we develop a lot of secondary symptoms or secondary medical conditions that have their own class of symptoms. And so you might hear someone with fibromyalgia say, there's like 100+ symptoms of fibro, which is correct, but it's not actually factual. It's, we have the classic symptoms of fibro, we've developed these other medical conditions, have those symptoms, and it's just this snowballing effect that's going on.
Right.
And so, you know, in a nutshell, that's fibromyalgia.
And a lot of what you describe, I know it's now classified as a central nervous system condition. However, a lot of what you describe, brain fog, pain, inflammation, all of that could easily be confused with an autoimmune.
Of course it could. And like I said, you know, there's two camps out there. You know, the jury's still out on whether fibromyalgia is an autoimmune disorder, you know, that's affecting or attacking the central nervous system, kind of similar to MS. Or if it is a central nervous system degenerative disease paralleling the likes of like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. And so it's hard on any given day, if you ask me what I think it falls under, autoimmune or degenerative central nervous system, my answer is going to change based on how I'm feeling, based on research that has come out, based on, and it, you know, that's a huge frustration, is treatment options really are, as far as the medical community goes, medical treatment options are very limited because they do not understand the root cause of fibromyalgia. And even though it has been classified as a central nervous system disorder, they don't know what kind it is. So although there's been some progress in understanding fibro and what it is within the scientific and medical community, knowing what's causing it and how to treat it, it's still ambiguous. We're still in the dark ages with it. And so treatment options are limited. Like I said, on some days I might tell you it's autoimmune. On some days I might tell you it's a central nervous system degenerative disease. You know, it just depends. Research out there is almost equally weighed between the two camps. So it's really hard to kind of decide what we think it is. And it's, if it's difficult for me, it's got to be extremely difficult for doctors who are trying to treat individuals with fibromyalgia, you know, because they're in the same camp as we are. We don't necessarily fully understand it and what's going on, and treatment options are limited. So
when did you find out you had fibromyalgia? I know sometimes it can take quite a while to diagnose because, as you said, some of the symptoms tend to shift, come and go in intensity, and it's almost like trying to hit a moving target. When did you first find out you were diagnosed with fibromyalgia?
So the first time fibromyalgia was put on my radar was in 2006 by a doctor at Kaiser Permanente, a rheumatologist. But back then, it was even more in the dark ages than it is now. And I was having these cluster of symptoms that, you know, couldn't figure out what was going on. And I would feel horrible for a few days, for a few weeks, maybe even a few months. And I was having all these odd things happening. This rheumatologist was like, you know, I think you have, at the time they called it fibromyalgia syndrome, and said, I think you have this, and handed me a pamphlet and said, you know, engage in physical activity, get rest, and eat healthy. The doctor said, although I don't think you'll have a problem with that because you're already living that lifestyle. And I was like, okay, so there's a problem. If I'm already living this lifestyle and I'm having these symptoms, then how am I going to get better? And back then, my symptoms were, I would say, mild to moderate, and they would flare up and kind of go in remission. However, moving forward, the reason why this rheumatologist came to this conclusion is I was having these symptoms since 2000. Going through the history and you know, what triggered my fibromyalgia. And, you know, from 2006, I moved forward. 2010 was like a major kind of like historical marker in my medical health. Like, I just started to decline. And it was really slow at first. I almost wasn't even thinking it was fibromyalgia. I wasn't taking any medication for it. I just thought, oh, okay, I have this pain condition. It's probably like arthritis, you know, and I have arthritis due to injuries I sustained while in the military. So I just kind of thought it was like that. So I was not a very well-educated patient back then. And so I kind of was moving forward. 2010, I started to notice a major decline, and I'm going to the doctors and specialists addressing these symptoms individually. And it took a while to kind of have that aha moment and tell a specialist, like, well, I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia back in 2006, but, you know, they told me a healthy lifestyle, get rest, and, you know, like, kind of like arthritis. And that doctor looked at me and said, I am going to send you over to a specialist who deals with, like, autoimmune issues. And it was really since then that I started to really start educating myself, because they were not knowing what was wrong with me, referring me to surgeons, thinking I had all these things wrong. I had my gallbladder taken out, you know. Then it was like, maybe you do need your appendix out, maybe you need your spleen out, maybe you have carpal tunnel, you know. So, and I got to the point where I was like, you know what, I'm not going to a surgeon anymore. I got to the point where I felt like I knew there's something going on. It took a while to click with me that this was fibromyalgia. And you just never heard about it back then. It wasn't on TV. Social media was not anywhere near what it is today. I think back in the day I was on MySpace, and I know I'm dating myself, but chronic illness in general and medical conditions in general on social media at that time really wasn't talked about. And I really started to have to become my own private detective and figure out what was going on, and bringing this information, doing this research, because I was tired of going to the doctors and I was tired of feeling unwell. And then I finally came across a pain management specialist, and who is awesome, who is still my doctor to this day, and referred me over to a doctor, a rheumatologist that specialized in fibromyalgia. at the Cleveland Clinic. And at that point, they did what they called the WPISS diagnostic assessment, which stands for widespread pain index and symptom severity. And, you know, they verified, yes, you do have fibromyalgia and you have severe treatment resistant fibro, you know, because they were trying some of the class of meds that were typical that they prescribed for fibro. And I was having either they weren't working or I was having severe allergic reactions or side effects that were putting me in the ER. And then the blood test came out. The first one came out called FMA by Epigenetics out of California. And it received FDA approval in 2012, and I had the test done in 2013, and it confirmed I had fibro. So it was a very interesting kind of roller coaster ride here, because like I said, even though I was diagnosed way back when, even myself, I wasn't thinking all this stuff I had going on was fibromyalgia. And I actually had been sent to two different rheumatologists and a neurologist, and they did a medical timeline of all my symptoms. And they, all three at three different medical facilities, concluded that my symptoms actually started in 2000 when I was in the military. That, and they started right after a military vehicle crash I was in. So, wow. Yeah. So when people ask me, you know, and when I look back, I'm like, yeah, I mean, like it just clicks. Everything falls in line. It makes sense. It makes you feel like, wow, it's this epiphany, you know, and you look back and then you're like, everything just falls in line as far as like, yeah, I did have fibromyalgia since 2000. So
it, I think it's really common. I hear that a lot though, where, and even in my own timeline, which I think are so valuable. If you haven't heard of the timeline, it's part of functional medicine. Mm-hmm. And you guys can do a timeline of your different symptoms. And what was so helpful for me is I had no idea that endometriosis, which I had when I was young, is considered, now there's some debate about it, but they're sort of lumping it in there with autoimmune. Sort of like you were saying, is it autoimmune? Is it central nervous system? It's one of those they just don't quite understand. But when you chart out your medical on a timeline, which I encourage you guys to do, and you can find that if you're like, well, how do I do that? So find a functional medical practitioner. That's one of their specialties, is charting that out. You'll come to really amazing coincidences with hindsight. You're like, why didn't I see it sooner? I hear that a lot with autoimmune thrivers. So they're like, wow. But it sort of creeps up slowly. In many people that I talk to in the show, I find that they're saying, well, yeah, I felt crummy for a while. And then, you know, you kind of get used to it, learn to cope with it. And then maybe something else, you know, all of a sudden you start feeling crummier or whatever. And I've noticed that until you get that diagnosis label, it's sort of like you're just floating in this kind of quagmire of very common symptoms that could be in a number of labels, depending on waiting until that one thing to happen to where they can say, okay, we're going to treat it as, in my case, dermatomyositis, in your case, fibromyalgia. And yet a lot of the early symptoms are so similar that it can be confusing, especially if you can't find medical professionals that deal with it a lot, which I had a hard time finding a team. I know you spent some time finding the right team for yourself as well.
I most certainly did. And that is a huge challenge, not, you know, just with fibromyalgia, but like you said, with other chronic illnesses, especially when they're in quote unquote invisible. I will tell you though, on a bad flare day, it is very evident that it is not invisible. You could tell I'm sick, but you know, it's really difficult with fibromyalgia because we don't have any specialists. They're just so few and far and in between. I know people that, I live in Cleveland, Ohio area. I know people that are coming from New York, from Kentucky, from Michigan, from Florida, up to my area to see the couple of specialists that are up here. The scary thing is that research that was actually done by the United States many moons ago and then reconfirmed with subsequent studies was that between 2-4% of the world's population has fibromyalgia. And people think, wow, that is just a lot. And I'm like, well, it equates to about how many people in the world have diabetes, have fibromyalgia. So we have all these individuals that are projected to have fibromyalgia In the United States, I've read anywhere between 5 to 10 million people are diagnosed with fibromyalgia. And so we have all these individuals that are, you know, fighting this illness, but not enough medical specialties for it, not enough doctors that are specializing and really do understand, who have read into it, who are staying current on, you know, recent up-to-date research and information and reclassification. And the huge problem is you don't have enough doctors who really understand and know what fibromyalgia is. And then there are some really good doctors out there who are not staying up to date. And then you have all these people who are kind of hanging in the wind there, you know, and it's scary because, you know, there's this one test that they used to do for fibromyalgia called the tender point test. And it was taken off the table in 2010 by the American College of Rheumatology. And that's when the WPI and SS diagnostic assessment that I referenced earlier was brought into play. And it's supposed to be the standard for assessing and diagnosing fibromyalgia. And here we are, 2019, and there are doctors who have not heard of this, right? And then much less doctors who have not heard of I talked about the FMA blood test, and there's another blood test out called Isolate Fibromyalgia, which is, they're in the works. They're by QD Labs in Tennessee, and they're in the works to get it approved by, covered by health insurance companies. So you have doctors that, the majority of doctors do not know about the WPI-SS diagnostic assessment, much less the blood tests. And one's been out for 7 years, and they're doing the tender point testing.
And I think that's critically important for people to understand that when you're feeling crummy, it's hard to understand, but I went through it, and Crystal's confirming my experience as well with her experience, is that it's really up to you to find out. It's unfortunate, but it's really up to you to find out everything you can about what's going on with yourself. You know your body best. And then to seek out those individuals who can help you, because there are a lot of people out there that aren't up on the latest research. And I often say to my own practitioners, my own team, I know more about autoimmune than you do. And they agree. But when you're living it, it becomes critically important. And when you're living through that, I think it's important that you become a strong self-advocate like Crystal and like myself. So, but we need to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more to Crystal about her self-advocacy work and how you too can become a self-advocate. So we'll be right back.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living. A chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour. Maybe you don't know I'm also an author. My latest book is for kids. It's Pinky Chenille and the Rainbow Hunters, a winner of a 5-star reader's favorite review. It's perfect for your early reader and a great bedtime story for your young adventurers. Check it out over at pinkychenille.com. That's PinkyChenille.com. See you there.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com, and we're here with Crystal Kent. She is someone who has fibromyalgia, and she is a strong patient advocate. She is a patient leader and patient advocate for the fibromyalgia community. She is also the co-founder of Veteran Voices for Fibromyalgia and the founder of the very informational and very interesting to read program called Fibromyalgia Pain Chronicles. So we've been talking about how hard it is to get diagnosed with fibromyalgia, and I could say with any autoimmune, but I want to jump into the, how did you become a self-advocate, and what kinds of tips do you have for people if they're saying, gosh, I've never really stepped out in that place before? And I'll say, like, for me, my first steps out are just stepping up for yourself in front of your doctor. But what are some other tips you have?
You know, and just to clarify, I didn't come running out of the box as this strong self-advocate. I had to learn. And so, and I'm very forward in stating things just in general in life. And I'm sitting here like, okay, I'm a strong opinionated person, or I'm not afraid to share my opinion. And yet I was failing myself as far as my own self-advocacy. So I did not just fall in and hit the ground running. I had to go through my experiences and go through all that red tape and barriers to learn that I need to be a better advocate for myself. And being this strong-minded person I am, I'm like, if I was struggling, then how are other people with chronic illness, whether it's fibromyalgia or another illness, how are they navigating all this if they're not as open? My first step I tell everybody is you need to become your own experts in your medical condition, regardless of what it is. And don't just stop at reading one article here, looking it up in the encyclopedia, or reading WebMD. I'm like, start pulling up actual research journals, research studies on fibromyalgia. You know, your best weapon is knowledge. Knowledge is power. And you have more power when you're actually pulling up reputable resources such as research studies on your medical condition, and you're not just reading something from HuffPost. You know, not, I love the site, but you know, that's not where I would tell people to go to better understand their illness. So you have to become your own expert. The other thing is understanding your patient rights that are designated by whatever medical facility you're at. And here in the United States, we have what they call state revised codes. I live in Ohio. So it's Ohio revised codes for patient rights. Each state has these revised codes, and those are adopted from federal law. So you really need to read up on your patient rights. And there's going to be some things that will shock you that you'll say, hey, this is my right, and they violated it. You know, so know your patient rights, read the privacy acts that they give you and HIPAA that they give you when you go to the doctor every year. A lot of people just sign it and then they throw it away. Those are based on federal and state laws, and it's to help you navigate and obtain the healthcare that you need and to be treated with dignity and respect. The other thing is a lot of people make the mistake, they get frustrated when they're battling a chronic illness. No one is really validating them, or they can't find a doctor that can really help them. And then when they finally get to a doctor that's going to listen, they're so aggravated by the end of the road there that we can, especially because we're not feeling well, come across a little bit antagonistic. So I tell people, when you're presenting information, you attract more bees with honey than vinegar. And if you found a research study, or if your doctor doesn't believe that there's a blood test for fibromyalgia, print the information from a reputable site or person or doctor and present it to the doctor. But don't be like, hey, you're wrong. Read this. Be more like, hey, Dr. ABC, I was doing some reading and look what I found. What are your thoughts on this blood test? You know, how you present the information will determine the course of discussion with your medical provider. So, and we already know the answer, but presenting it as if you're asking their expert opinion is going to keep that dialogue going. you know, and then they're going to be more open to the information. And here's the other thing. A lot of people, for lack of a better term, and I was like this myself, and I've learned, and I'm not like this anymore. We become complacent, where we just take whatever the doctor gives us as far as information or what they know, what they prescribe us, and then we go on our merry little way. And I tell people, yes, they are doctors, but don't just sit in your doctor's appointment and nod your appointment, then walk out, go home, and like have a complete breakdown crying because this doctor does not understand. You know, you might have to window shop, is what I say. And it's very frustrating. I went through 8 different specialists to finally get a team who was knowledgeable enough and validating enough, and even admitting like, hey, I didn't know about this, or I don't understand this either. That's the kind of doctors you want. You are not going to find a doctor who's going to know every little pinpoint of your illness. Because guess what? The world, we have who knows how many medical conditions out there. The other thing is, a lot of people have difficulty getting referred to specialists from their primary care physicians, family doctors, or general practitioners. So if you have a medical condition or concern, it is within your patient right to obtain appropriate and timely treatment. And it's not with your general practitioner, it's with a specialist. And if they're refusing to refer you out, you can file with the patient advocate a complaint, because they are at that point violating your federally and state protected rights. And the thing of it is that they'll say, my doctor won't do anything. They won't refer me out. And I'm like, well, that's your right. And you can request it, but request it in a way where it's respectful and with dignity and respect to the provider, because we have those rights set for us to be treated with dignity and respect. So it's a two-way street. And remember, at the end of the day, they're people. And the other thing is, people do rely too heavily on their general practitioners. They don't ask for a referral. And I explain it like this. If you have cancer, okay, let's say you have, a gentleman has prostate cancer, right? So they're going to get referred to an oncologist, but you don't want just any oncologist. Like, you don't want to go to an oncologist that specializes in breast cancer. You want the specialist of oncology who specializes in prostate cancer. This is the same concept that you need to follow with any medical condition and specialized medical condition, including fibromyalgia. You don't want to go to your primary care doctor because they're there for general health and wellness. And it's at that point that you have to be willing and not afraid to ask for a referral. I've heard and read stories where some general practitioners have not been easy to work with, but they also have to understand that this is not their specialty. And whether they believe fibromyalgia or any other invisible illness is tangible or not is not up to them. It's up to the specialist. And that's a huge thing, is that a lot of people just kind of sit in limbo because they're either afraid or their doctors aren't helping. And I'm like, guess what? Look at it this way. As a person with an illness, you are actually a customer. One way or another, you're paying these, you know, entities to take care of you. And if they're not providing the service you need, you can go and go somewhere else, you know, and it is frustrating. And you will. I'm right now, warning now, you're probably going to go through at least 3 doctors, at least.
At least, yeah.
And maybe not 8 like I did, but, you know, times are changing a little bit, slowly but surely, that fibromyalgia is becoming a little bit better understood. So hopefully you don't have to go through 8, but know that you will have to do what I say, window shopping, to find the right fit. You know, if I wear a size 9 shoe, I'm not going to go and try to put my foot in a size 7. It's not going to work. I need that size 9. It's the same approach that you need for your medical care. You need to find the right fit and keep researching it, keep moving forward until you find it. And eventually it will happen. It's just, the process is frustrating.
Yeah, it can be very frustrating. And I say it's a team. I don't have just one doctor. But the critical part for me in finding not only the specialists, that's plural, was making sure that they were willing to talk to each other as well, that I am not the only go-between. Yeah, but so-and-so said, and yeah, but so-and-so said. It's like, you guys all need to talk to each other so you know that what one is saying about the other. It's important that they understand the whole system, not just their slice of the system, like an oncologist, like a rheumatologist oftentimes you go to with autoimmune. That's the first kind of specialist you end up at. but you might see a gastroenterologist or, you know, who knows, a podiatrist because of foot problem, nerve problems in your feet, who knows. But making sure that they're all willing and able to talk to each other. And yes, I know there's a lot of pushback because it does take time for doctors to talk to each other.
And it does. And I'm sure that that's a huge frustration that I've had. And as you're saying, that is a huge barrier. One of the nice things about moving along with technology is a lot of medical doctors and medical facilities and clinics, you can now create an account online and print at least the basic summary of your visit with another doctor. So I've moved from the point where I'm not verbally relaying information from another doctor. I print that information, I take it with me, and I give it to this other specialist. I ask them to put it in my chart. Another thing I tell people to do is bring your medications with you. Some people get afraid of carrying a whole bottle of their meds. And I said, well, you know, you could set your meds up in a pill box and then just take the bottles with you. That will show like how many refills you have left if you're afraid you might lose a bottle of medication.
I take cell phone pictures of the, and then, you know, instead of carrying it, I just set it up, take a good clear picture of the label and any other, maybe the back label if that's important. And then I've got, okay, we're just going to go through the photo album here. These are what I'm taking. And it also helps me because sometimes I can't spell it. So
right. I have that problem too. Although, and I have done that for medications that are not considered either opiate or sedative or controlled. And a lot of people think that all controlled meds are prescribed pain meds, and they're not. You know, there's some medications I use for muscle relaxers or even for mental health conditions that are considered a controlled substance.
And or supplements and vitamins too. There's a lot of those that go unreported, which could be contraindicated with any of the medications that you're describing.
You know, one of the things I do recommend, and yeah, the taking the picture is great, but if you are taking a controlled substance, as they say, and with this current opiate crisis and epidemic, I still do advocate you take those medications if you're being prescribed a pain med, especially when you see your pain management doctor or specialist, if you have one, because a lot of doctors, if you're bringing those meds and you're being transparent that you're taking them as prescribed and appropriately, then they're going to continue to prescribe those meds for you. You know, usually, I know there's some roadblocks right now because of the concerns with addiction and everything that across the world. But this is just one extra step to show your provider that, you know, you're doing everything you're supposed to be doing as they prescribed for transparency. And I do that with my pain doctor. I don't take a lot of medications anymore. I'm down to 3 and 2 of them are as needed. But I still, you know, if I need to take a pain medication because I can't walk because my pain is so bad, it's either take that or go to the ER. I'd rather take the medicine. And so I do take that bottle so they can count it and know that I'm not abusing it.
Good point. We need to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk some more with Crystal about patient advocacy, some of the things that you need to know, as well as living with fibromyalgia. We'll be right back.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the OM Times Experts program. With OM Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, sorry, I'm rambling, you say, thank you for listening. Join us at projectforgive.com, a free non-religious resource on global forgiveness.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour. Maybe you don't know I'm also an author. My latest book is for kids. It's Pinky Chenil and the Rainbow Hunters, a winner of a 5-star reader's favorite review. It's perfect for your early reader and a great bedtime story for your young adventurers. Check it out over at pinkychenil.com. That's PinkyChenille.com. See you there.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Show. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com, and tonight we're talking with Crystal Kent. She's a self-advocate and an advocate for patients with fibromyalgia, and she's a patient leader in that field. She also has the website called Fibromyalgia Pain Chronicles, and she's a co-founder of Veterans Voices for Fibromyalgia. And we've been sharing sort of the nitty-gritty realities of life when you've diagnosed with, in her case, fibromyalgia, in my case, autoimmune, which is dermatomyositis, and sharing just what it's like to be navigating your own healthcare and your own wellness. So welcome back, Crystal. As we were talking there about all sorts of things, like things to do when you have medical appointments and also how to create your own team of doctors. And one thing I know you and I shared before the show was I want to point out that it's okay to, I'll put in air quotes, fire a doctor. It's okay to tell someone that even if they're like, there might be the best specialist that you've found, but if you go to yourself, gosh, they're not listening to me, they're poo-pooing what I'm saying, whatever the words are going through your mind, it's okay to say, what's that new song? Thank you, next. Right. It's okay to do that. So you add, yes. Like you said, you do it in a nice, kind way. Thank you very much for your advice. I'll be seeking a second opinion, or maybe just say, thank you for your advice, and don't make a second appointment. But Crystal, what are some things that you have for people as they continue to navigate and understand some of the things that they need to know about getting the best quality care they can?
Well, I spoke about this earlier, and I always feel it needs repeating, is make sure that you are your own expert on your medical condition and do your research.
I want to chime in there with the other one, though, is nobody knows your body like you. So
correct.
Even if you're saying, okay, well, Sharon, I checked off the list of, you know, this brain fog, whatever, muscle weakness, what, you know, and look, you know your body best, and they might give you stats and other things, but always listen to your body first and speak up, going, no, not really. That's not happening. This is happening. Or understanding that words sometimes mean different things. A while ago, I had a leadership coaching client who kept using the word loopy. I didn't know what that word meant. So we had to sit down and have a discussion of describe loopy to me. And then I went, got it.
Right. And the other thing though, you know, I highly recommend, and it's easier these days with technology again, is like we talked about earlier about a medical history timeline. I highly recommend people keep a daily journal so that they can kind of track the waxing and waning of their symptoms. And then all of a sudden a new symptom comes up and say, well, wait, I've had fibro for 19 years and I've never had this symptom. Is this fibromyalgia or is it something else? And I can't tell you how many times that I had something come up and it was something else. And you know, not to digress, but I'm going through another process. The military vehicle accident I was in 2000, you know, those injuries have progressed to the point where I was having issues and I knew they weren't related to fibromyalgia. And I had to advocate really hard to get an MRI done and to be referred to a neurosurgeon. And then like when everything came back, all the doctors were like, oh my goodness. And that's just piggybacking what you just said, Sharon, is that you know your body best, and documenting, you know, on a, I know it's hard for some people to do it daily, but on a routine basis, if you can, is your one of your best tools to have. And with technology and smartphones and iPads and computers, you know, you can download apps where you can do talk to text. So if you have problems writing or your hands hurt, you can verbally say and document it, what is going on from day to day or from week to week. So true.
But and I'm also going to piggyback on that a little bit, is keeping a notebook of your medical records. Like you said, you can print out those patient summaries and everything. Mm-hmm. I found it actually easier for me. I'm kind of old school here, but print it out and put it in a three-wing binder in chronological order. That way I can, there it was. I don't have to try and find it. And then on the journal side, what I like to do, I've said this before numerous times on the show, but I'll just reiterate it if you're new to the show, is I always write on the right-hand side of the journal of today and then leave the left side blank. And then what I do is I like to go back, and it doesn't have to be a specific time, but, you know, at some point in time, I go back and I reread, and then I write what's changed on the left-hand side. And what is amazing about that is then I can see, oh, this too shall pass, or, oh, I was doing that and it made me feel better, and for whatever reason I got off that track, maybe if I went back and did that again, would I have the same result and feel better again? So it's amazing to me what we tend to forget or dismiss, or that journaling can bring us back to that place of remembering. Oh man, I was feeling really bad, but now I'm feeling better. So I understand that it's not always going to be crummy.
Right. And the other thing that I tell people in their journals is to write down any like outside variables. Because sometimes, yes, stressors, if you don't have any medical illness, stress causes physical reactions. And stress can make you sick. I mean, how many people do we know have said, hey, stress triggers headaches and migraines? I mean, we know, you know, we've all said that, or upset stomach. And the other thing I tell people is, like, in your journal or next to your medical notes, because I do the same thing, and I have volumes of
it does become overwhelming, doesn't it?
it does. But I also say, hey, if you really think on each day or each week, if there was anything out of the ordinary or extra stressful, put that in there, because, you know, we can't always control everything that happens, but a good thing to focus on is trying to control how you react. And a lot of people don't realize, like, you know, there is importance of mind over matter in some situations. And sometimes when you're chronically ill and you're chronically fatigued and you're in pain, our tolerance to deal with stuff is lower. And so sometimes we have to develop, you know, coping mechanisms to better handle stressors. And if we can handle those stressors better, then it won't exacerbate our medical condition as much. So, I mean, it really is a holistic self approach of self care. It's not just taking medications to make yourself feel better. You have to be cognizant of so many factors. And there's things you can't control. The weather does affect me. We can't control it. But understanding that the weather affects me, because I've documented in the past, then I'm not so stressed out trying to figure out why am I in a flare up? It just went from 60 degrees to 20 degrees. Now I know. And I live in Cleveland, Ohio. It happens like that. Within 48 hours, yesterday we were 70 degrees. I think by tomorrow we'll be 35 or 37. But even though the weather is still going to compound my body and aggravate my, you know, medical condition, because I know it's going to, I am more mentally prepared for it. And yes, I'm going to hurt or feel more sick, but I don't have that added stressor of why is this happening? Why am I in such a flare up right now? And that's why it's a really good tool to do a daily journal. And like you said, and I do the same thing, I have probably, I think the last time I counted, I had 15 three-ring binders of all my medical notes, but I do keep my medical stuff for the military separate from my private, because it's two different systems. But I've learned a lot by just doing that and realizing that sometimes just knowing the problem makes the problem less. Knowing what's triggering things, just knowing that, having that knowledge helps a lot.
And I liked where you, one time I was discussing, sometimes I was having sleep issues and they asked me a lot of pertinent questions that made sense. And I'm of the age where menopause is an issue and sleep disruptions can be part of that as well. So keeping an, I'll say open mind, that's probably not the right word, but it's one that's coming to me right now about maybe it is not autoimmune right now. Maybe it is something else or a combination of both of them. That, and so oftentimes that's why it can get quite confusing when we're trying to discuss or advocate for our own healthcare with a healthcare provider. So making sure that we have enough information available that we can keep it straight in our own mind as well as help them get it straight as well. Because oftentimes it can become confusing. I don't know how many times I've seen on people's medical records that family members and things where they come back and they ask you, like, is this all your medical conditions or whatever? Like, well, you know, you've never had XYZ. Why is that marked? So it's very common that even the medical records can be incorrect.
Yes. And there's another component to that is we seem to forget that doctors and medical personnel are people too, and they do make mistakes, not purposefully, because we make mistakes. So we don't want people getting all bent out of shape when we make a mistake. So that's another reason why to print out and have a hard copy of your medical records, because if you see if something is documented incorrectly, you can take that to the next appointment and say, hey, we discussed this. It's not in my medical record, or the nurse put in that I take, I don't know, Trazodone, which is a common medication that they would prescribe for people with fibro to help them sleep, but you've never taken it, you know, and people make mistakes. And that's the other thing, to be on top of your medical records, because what if you go and have a surgery and they might give you a med and don't know that you have a medication that's not listed, and it could be a problem, or they won't prescribe something because someone mistakenly put the wrong medication. And that's a true story for me, is that I had a nurse, I prescribed Tizidine, which is a muscle relaxer, and she accidentally put Trazodone, which is used to help with sleep. And then in higher doses, it's used for depression. In lower doses, it's to help people to fall asleep. And the doctor was like hesitant to be like wanting to prescribe something that was going to help my body cope with pain better, because they saw Trazodone. And I was like, I'm not on Trazodone, but I didn't have any proof. So, you know, had the printup of my records, brought in my medical bottles, and I went to my pharmacy and I asked them to print the medications that I had filled in the past year. So I had all these matching documents to show the doctor it's just a typo, and it happens. We make mistakes. So don't become like hell on wheels and start going off, because we all make mistakes and we are not perfect. And understanding that these medical professionals are people too, but it's just as much as our responsibility to make sure that our information is correct as much as it is your medical providers, because you should be working as a team.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my goodness, Crystal, we're almost out of time. This has been awesome. I love this kind. We haven't had this sort of deep, raw, in the trenches sort of talk about what it's like and things that you have both learned to navigate the system, shall I say. And tell everyone, how can they get a hold of you?
The easiest way to get a hold of me is on Facebook. I do have two pages. One is called the Fibromyalgia Pain Chronicles. Put that in the search bar, I pop up. And also, if you're a military personnel or veteran with fibromyalgia, we have the Veteran Voices for Fibromyalgia on Facebook. I am also on Instagram at Crystal@TFPC. And these places is where you're going to find a lot of information about your illness, advocating self-care, self-love, support, and validation. And those are where you can find me, the easiest ways.
Oh, awesome. And thank you for all the work you're doing for changing the way that people with chronic pain and chronic illness autoimmune fibromyalgia can navigate the world. That's really important. And I appreciate all the work that you're doing on behalf of everyone else. And everyone, have a great week, whatever your adventures. Join me next week for another episode. As always, enjoy.
The information provided on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, including the websites understandingautoimmune.com and lifeinterruptedradio.com, plus social media, is for educational purposes only. What you read, hear, and see on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, and its websites and other media outlets, is based on experience only. The information should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, "Sorry, I'm rambling," you say, "Thank you for listening." Join us at ProjectForgive.com, a free non-religious resource on global forgiveness.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour. Maybe you don't know I'm also an author. My latest book is for kids. It's Pinky Chenille and the Rainbow Hunters, a winner of a 5-star reader's favorite review. It's perfect for your early reader and a great bedtime story for your young adventurers. Check it out over at pinkychenille.com. That's PinkyChenille.com. See you there.